مولانا ابي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى اله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. اما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ان الدين عند الله الاسلام. صلوات
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
The subject that we have been discussing is understanding Islam and how we understand Islam, from where we understand Islam, and what's the importance of understanding Islam in the way that it has been made understood to us. Because we see that the problems that Islam had faced was through the misunderstanding of Islam. And the issues we face right now is also because of not understanding the concepts of Islam. What are the different concepts of Islam? What do they mean? When we don't understand these things, that's when we make mistakes of knowing what step to take, what decision to make, and hence we end up doing that which Allah does not want us to do. So now we see that Islam is not understood by intellectuals or scholars, and Islam is not understood by rulers and kings. If Islam has to be understood, the only way to understand Islam is from those people that Allah sent with the book, and He made them infallible so that we can gain Islam from them in the way Allah wanted us to get it. And when we see in terms of rulers, you see, that is exactly where the misunderstanding of Islam took place. Right at the beginning of Islam, we see this misunderstanding took place as to what is Islam. Who is the Prophet? That was the mistake that was made at the beginning. The problem that occurred in Islam occurred on the night of Fath Makkah. And I want you to understand this very well. On the night of Fath Makkah, something happened that changed Islam forever. See? That changed Islam forever. Now what happened? You know, the night of Fath Makkah was when the army of the Muslims came with the Prophet. And all of them came and they camped outside of Makkah. The Prophet, in his wisdom, had asked all the Muslims to light their lamps in the tents that they had made. Now the scene was such that as far as the eyes can see, there were lights. I mean, it was an amazing sight. As far as the eyes can see, you saw there was lights upon lights upon lights. You would think that this is millions and millions of people who are here. And it was such a majestic sight. And there were two people who were watching this scene from a mountain. There are two people who are watching this scene from a mountain. One person was a Muslim, the other person was a kafir. One was a Muslim, the other one was a kafir. Both of them were friends. They were watching this scene. The Muslim, his name was Abbas ibn Abdul Muttalib, the uncle of the Prophet. And the infidel, the kafir, his name was Abu Sufyan. Now watch this. They were watching this scene. This is the army of the Muslims that encamped outside of Makkah. It was so large, the lights were so many, that they were all watching the scene, and as these two were watching the scene, Abu Sufyan passed a comment. Understand this. Abu Sufyan passed a comment, and he said, look at this. Look at this, he said. Your nephew, Abbas, your nephew has made himself a great kingdom. See this. He has made himself a great hukumat, a government, a kingdom. This is what Abu Sufyan said. When Abbas ibn Abdul Muttalib heard that, right away he commented, this is not a hukumat. This is not a kingdom. It is called nabuwat. It is called prophethood. Understand this. When this huge army was looked upon, the kafir thinks it's a kingdom. The Muslim thinks this is nabuwat. Understand this. There are two ideologies, one of the kuffar, one of the Muslims. Kuffar thought what the Prophet had is a kingdom, it's a rule, it's a government, it's a hukumat. Muslims knew that this is prophethood, this is messengership, this is representation of Allah, this is not a kingdom. See, they understood that. So Muslims had one ideology, kuffar had another ideology. But something happened that night that changed the course of Islam. Understand this, my brothers and sisters. Something happened that night that changed the course of Islam. You see, what happened was that kafir became Muslim. That kafir became Muslim. So it means until that night, there was only one ideology in Islam that knew this is nabuwat. From that day onwards, there were two ideologies in Islam. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now there were Muslims who thought this is nabuwat, and there were Muslims who thought this is kingdom. You see that? That's the problem that happened. See, the people, now the kuffar used to think this is a kingdom. Now there are Muslims who think this is a kingdom.
Right.
You see, now there are Muslims who think this is kingdom. So now there were two types of Muslims now. From that day onwards, there were two types of Muslims and there were two thinkings in Islam.
Right.
And so what happened is that those who thought this is nabuwat, they believed in shariat. They believed in the law of Islam. And they were dictated by Allah's law. They were dictated by Allah's kingdom. In fact, they were limited by Allah's kingdom, by Allah's law. And those who did not, those who thought this was a kingdom, to them, whatever they got was right. It doesn't matter who they follow. It doesn't matter who they follow. If they get it, it's right. If I got it, it's right. If I'm stronger, I get it. I get it. Alhamdulillah, it's mine. You see, this was their ideology. Muslims were dictated by this. So now the problem came when the Prophet died and the time came to take the next stand and accept the successor of the Prophet to take over the government. So now what happened? These two ideologies collided. There was one who said, we need to do what Allah says. There's the other who said, no, let us do what is right for us. And so now, you see, when these two always collide, there's a problem that happens. See? There's a problem that happens. And that is, those who have the ideology of kuffar, they always get what they want. Because the Muslims, those who believe in nabuwat, they are restricted by shariat. So let me give you an example to make you understand what happened. You know, it's the month of Ramadan. You invite me over to your house for iftar. You say, Maulana, you come and eat iftar with us. I say, Alhamdulillah, I'll come and eat iftar. So what happened is that I reached there 1 hour earlier. 1 hour before. When I came to your house, I see that all the food is outside, already on the table in the warmers. And it smells good also. But the issue is, you know, there's 1 hour left. So I say, all right, let me, you know. So you say, Maulana, you're early, so why don't you do something? Why don't you go upstairs and rest? At the time of iftar, you come down and eat. Alhamdulillah. And my, you know, my mouth is watering now. So I go upstairs. I say, you know, obviously I have to wait till iftar. I go upstairs and I rest. Now some other friends of yours come. Some other friends come. And while they should be fasting, they're not. So they look at the food. And they say, this is yummy. So right away they start eating it. Right away they start eating it. They eat it. So now, after my rest, now I'm ready for the food. I come down at the time of iftar. I wash my hands, I come down, I say, Alhamdulillah, it's time to eat now. I come down and I see that the whole table has been rampaged. And there are no leftovers. I look and I say, what's this? The Maulana, oh, you missed it. My friends were here and they ate it all. They ate it all. If you had come earlier, you would have got something also. I said, but what do you mean I should come earlier? When those guys came, you should have come also. You should have come also. And if you would have come, you would have also got all these good stuff. But those guys took it. I said, but wait a minute. It wasn't time for iftar then. It wasn't time for iftar. How can I come before that? Well, Maulana, that's what happens. If you wait for iftar, you know, I mean, these things don't last long, they go away. He said, but I'm restricted by the law of Allah. If they did not obey the law of Allah, so it means they got it. My restriction was that I obeyed the law of Allah. And that's why I didn't get it. My friends, this is exactly what happened at the death of the Prophet. Those who knew Nabuwat, they stayed behind mourning for the Prophet. Those who wanted kingdom, they went and searched for their kingdom. So the restriction was not that they didn't want hukumah, the restriction was the sharia and the love of Rasulullah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. See, those people who did not, if you say our Imam did not go, he couldn't, how can he leave the body of Rasulullah and go there hunting for power? To him, Nabuwat was important. This is the reason it came. To them, it wasn't important. So now, my brothers, this is what happened. That's where the split took place. Now you see where Islam became misunderstood. Those who thought that hukumat and kingdom was Islam, they made their Islam, they made their kingdom. They made a kingdom for themselves. And they called it Islam. See, this is a misunderstanding that took place in history. Now when people think of Islam, why is there misunderstanding Islam? This is something I want you to understand today. You see, they made kingdoms for themselves and they called it Islam. They went out to fight to expand their kingdom, they called it jihad.
Right.
So now when people looked at jihad, they said, oh, Islam spread by the sword. You see, what happened? My brothers, understand this. We take Islam from the Prophet. We take Islam from the character of Rasulullah. And I want you to see the difference now. What happens? Here is the whole mistake that happened in history. These people, they took the kingdom. They made a kingdom for themselves. They called it Islam. You see, like for example, you have a son. And you named your son Islam. So now what happened? Your son Islam is growing up, so you say Islam is growing. Like, Islam is growing? No, oh, your son Islam is growing. Okay. Then your son gets sick, so you say Islam is sick. Wait a minute. What do you mean Islam is sick? No, my son Islam is sick. Oh, your son is sick. Not Islam, right? Yes, not Islam. You see a misunderstanding? Then what happened? Your son grows up and he fails in his test. You say Islam failed. He said, what happened? Islam failed? No, my son failed. Oh, your son failed. Okay. You see the misunderstanding? Now what happens? Your son goes astray. You see Islam went astray. Islam went astray. No, my son went astray. Okay, your son went astray. Say that. Now when your son dies, you say Islam is dead. I said, Islam is not dead. Your son is dead. You see, this is the misunderstanding that happened. It was their kingdoms. It was their kingdoms. They expanded it, so their Islam is growing.
Subhanallah. Very good point.
You see, they expanded their kingdom, so they said Islam is growing. They expanded their harem, so they say Islam is on the rise. Right? Their wealth was growing, so they say, Alhamdulillah, Islam is getting richer. Right? This is what happened. This is the whole misunderstanding that took place. Islam was not growing, it was their kingdoms that were growing. It was their harems that were growing. It was their boundaries that were growing. Islam was not. So they say, the rise of Islam. What is the rise of Islam? You see, Muslims grew and their kingdoms grew. What do you mean the rise of Islam? So now when the rise of Islam happened, then everything that rises must fall. Everything that rises must fall. So now when they started losing their boundaries, now they said the fall of Islam. They started losing their palaces, they said the fall of Islam. They started losing their harems. They said, the fall of Islam. They started losing their oil. They said, the fall of Islam. My brothers and sisters, we need to ask them, what do you mean Islam has a rise and Islam has a fall? You see, your whole understanding of Islam was wrong. That's why you equated your kingdom to Islam. So your kingdoms grew. Islam did not grow. You see, Islam did not grow, your kingdoms grew, your kingdoms fell. But you said your kingdoms are Islam, so people thought this is Islam. And so there was a rise, there was a fall. If you had understood Islam, Islam is a haqiqat. Islam is a reality, Islam is a truth. A truth does not fall or rise. You see, understand this. Honesty is a truth. It's a reality, it's the haqiqat, honesty. If everyone stops being honest, do you say honesty is on the fall? No, the people are not being honest, they are on the fall, not the honesty. Honesty is in its place. If everyone becomes honest, do you say that all people, honesty is on the rise? Honesty is not on the rise. Honesty is honesty. Whether everyone becomes honest or they stop being honest, honesty would not change its position as being a truth. It has no rise, it has no fall. Just like that, Islam is the deen of Allah. It is a reality, it is a truth. It has no rise, it has no fall. It has no rise, it has no fall. If everyone becomes a Muslim, Islam will not rise, Islam is still the truth. If everyone leaves Islam, Islam will not fall, Islam is still the truth. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Allah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Understand this, what happened. When they say, Islam fell, what fell? What was falling? You say Islam fell, in reality Islam is 17 rakat of prayer. Did those 17 rakat become 10? No, they're still 17. Okay. Islam is 6,666 ayat. Now, are there any less? No. Okay, Islam is the same. Islam is the character of Rasulullah and the belief in Nabuwat. Is there a doubt in that? No. Islam is Tawheed. Is there a doubt in that? No. Islam is Akhirat. Is there a doubt in that? No. So where did Islam fall? Islam is still Islam. Islam is the will of Allah. Islam cannot fall. Islam, there is no concept of rise nor fall. My brothers, if we want to rise, we come to Islam. If we want to fall, we go away from Islam. The rise and fall is in us, the Muslims, not in Islam. Islam is the truth. Islam is a truth, is a haqiqat that cannot be changed. This is what needs to be understood. So now, when we looked at history, and this is how they wrote history, and I want you to see how they wrote history. They wrote history of how Islam expanded. They said that the Prophet, Messenger, the Prophet came with Quran in one hand and a sword in the other hand and conquered and took over. Now, obviously, I'm a student of history. And as a student, I asked them, tell me, where in the Prophet's life did he ever take a sword in his hand? Show me one place as a Prophet that he took the sword in his hand in any battle. I mean, why would he? There was no need for him. You see, that's the reason Allah in His wisdom made an arrangement for that, so that the Prophet never had to lift that sword in his life. He made an arrangement for that, so that the Prophet in his whole life never had to raise a sword. He sent someone with him with a sword. So that when he at last, long as he is there, Rasulullah never had a need to raise a sword in his hand. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
Understand this. So now, Rasulullah did not raise a sword in his whole life. So who are you talking about? Oh, you're talking about the Muslim armies. Yes, when the Muslim army came, they came with a sword in one hand and the Quran in the other hand. And obviously, we tell everyone that, listen, the Muslims came. Where did you see the Prophet amongst them? Prophet never came with them. So if you want to understand Islam, why are you looking at this Muslim army? Look at the Prophet's army. When the Prophet, when he came, did he bring a sword in his hand? You see, he never brought the sword in his hand. And when he gave Islam to us, he gave us two things. He gave us two things. He gave the book of Allah, Quran in one hand, and Ahlul Bayt in the other hand. So our hands were full.
MashaAllah.
Our hands were full. MashaAllah. Those who didn't take one of them, their hand was empty.
Very good.
Their hand was empty, so they took the sword. But if you had taken Islam from Rasulullah as he gave it, you wouldn't have a place for a sword. You would have the Quran in one hand and Ahlul Bayt in the other hand. Salawat.
MashaAllah.
Understand this. How misunderstanding took place. What kind of misunderstandings took place. So now you see, when people looked at Muslims, they saw the Prophet. Prophet was not there. This is those Muslims army who came to expand their kingdom. They were expanding their kingdom. So if you want to understand Islam, why are you going to them? Go to the Prophet. This is where the whole discrepancy comes in. This is where we pull the people and say, you want to learn Islam. Islam is learned not from rulers. It is learned from the Prophet. It is learned from those who he has appointed. And when you saw that, my brothers here, from here, you saw that. Two different lines came down. Two different characters. You saw the character of these rulers. Really, I don't have time to go in their character. What kind of people they were. I mean, if you want to know history and what these people were, if you think Yazid was bad, really, if you think Yazid was bad, if you know anything about history, those who came after Yazid, really, they make Yazid look very soft and good. I mean, the people who came after Yazid, I mean, Yazid, obviously, we know what kind of person he was. But you see these kings who came after that, and each one of them was called Khalifatul Muslimin. Each one of them called Wasiyya Rasulullah. Each one of them was called the representative of the Prophet. I can give you examples after examples, you want them. But just if you want to know, out of the list I will give you one example and go on so you have an understanding of that. And then compare that to the akhlaq of the imam. One person, Ulayman ibn Yazid ibn Abdul Malik ibn Marwan. He is one of the khulafa. And he's a leader. Now this guy, and you can see it in history and in every history. His liking was, he liked to eat. And he ate. And he ate a lot. No, by a lot, I mean really a lot. That even, you know, I mean, here, if I say what's written in the history books, you will think I'm exaggerating. Really. For breakfast, you would have four goats. In breakfast. Really, this is in breakfast thing. Right? He didn't live long. With an eating habit like that, you don't. But this guy, you see, he used to eat so much that 100 years later, when Harun Rashid became the Khalifa, his clothes were brought before him. And his clothes used to smell of oil, and there was oil all over his sleeves. Even after washing it, they couldn't get rid of it. Harun Rashid asked, what kind of clothes are these? They said, oh, you know, this guy, he used to love eating so much that he couldn't wait for the food to be served on his plate. He would dip his hands into the place of the food and take out the food. And hence his whole sleeves would get wet with. And then this is his other brother now. His other brother, who became a Khalifa also after he died. He used to have a pond in his house that was filled with wine. And he used to dive in that pond and drink it. In the pool. He used to dive in the pool and drink it. And after drinking it, it is said in history books that you could see that the whole pool would be less after he comes out. You mean he used to drink so much. Who are these people? These people are the leaders of the Muslims. These are the leaders of Muslims. These were who you known as, for example, Zillullahi fil arth. Allah is shade on the earth. You see? Obviously, you know, there's more to it, you know, and inshallah, this is not the time to go into it. But I'm just explaining to you these examples of who these people were. What kind of rulers did Muslims have? So now tell me, if you have someone like this as a leader of Islam, and if people came to Islam and accepted Islam, and many people were accepting Islam, in the whole world many people were accepting Islam, if they came and saw that this is their leader, that this is their leader, who are known for their debauchery, who are known for their extravagance, who are known for their ill manners, when they look at them, do you think that they will become Muslims? But understand this, do you think that they will become Muslims? They, even if you saw it, if you saw that this is your leader, and he is drunk all the time, really, nowadays you see that they have this huge thing that women should lead prayer. Right? The woman should lead prayer of men. But I'll tell you, this is not something new. It happened in those days also. It happened in those days also. One of the Khalifas, he was making zina with someone at night. He was so drunk that the time came for azan. When the azan came, he could not get up to go. So he put his aba on that woman that he did zina of, and he asked her to go and lead the prayer. She came out and led the prayer. Everyone prayed behind her, but no one would dare say anything. Understand what kind of leaders were there? Who were these people that we are talking of? And then when you hear of the imams being brought before these people, then understand what kind of torment that they faced to stand in front of such a person. You see, this, my brothers, understand this. So now, when you see this happening, these type of leaders, these type of characters, who would accept Islam? So why were people staying in Islam? Why in those times, with these type of leaders, with these type of people, why would anyone want to stay in Islam? My brothers, this is what the imams had done. They had made sure that they sent their followers in every part of the world that Islam is growing, and said, just like those people are the bad example, and they give the bad name of Islam, you go there, and you be the example of Islam in every part of the world. So the people used to look at them, then they used to look at the Shia of the Imams, and they say, no, this is what we heard the Prophet about. This is the example and character of the Prophet. Now you see, I will explain to you what the Imams are, and then you understand what the Imams said about the Shia. First of all, the Imams, when we look at the character of the Imams, you saw a different character coming out. A completely different character. On one side you have these people, and on the other side you have Imam Ali, who would take out bread in the middle of the night. He would take the bread in the middle of the night and leave it in front of the homes of people who need it. Imam Ali used to do that. Now, you know, let me tell you why he used to do that also. He explained this in a letter that he wrote to Malik Akbar. He explained this character. Imam Ali did not do this. Many people think, even the Shias think, that he did it to hide his identity from the people, that he is doing good. No, it's not because of that. Imam Ali used to give in the day also. Why was he giving in the night? Understand what kind of character the Imams were raising in humanity. What kind of ideals were they giving in humanity? Imam used to go out at night, give bread to the people. He used to do that in the day also. So why did he give the same bread in the day to those people? Imam Ali wrote a letter to Malik Yashtar explaining him the rules of how to govern the people. In it he writes about a group of people that you have to take care of as a ruler. Understand this, my brothers. There's a group of people, he said, that you need to take care of, he told Malik. because there are certain people who are poor. You know? You see, they're poor. But they don't like to ask. They don't like to ask. They don't like to beg. You know? Imam Ali said to Malik, that Malik, there is a group of people that you need to go out and help them. They will never come to you and ask you for help. And he described that group with this statement. He said that they are too poor to eat and they are too proud to ask. They have too much self-respect to ask for anything. And they are too poor to eat anything. If you do not go out and help them, they will die, but they will never ask anyone. You see, the ideals that Imamat is trying to teach us, where they want to take us. So Imam Ali was not feeding those poor because he wants to hide their identity. He was feeding them in the dark and giving them bread so he can hide their identity from their neighbors. So that their neighbors do not know that they are on welfare. See, this, my brothers, this is that ideals that the Imams are trying to give to the world. And when you see these two Islams, they come, one that of the rulers, and one that of the Imams in Ahlul Bayt. You saw such a vast difference that you see that they have such a vast difference and such a huge way of life, a difference in way of life. That the rulers, when you looked at them, they did wrong. They did all these things. But then they brought ulama to say, listen, whatever the rulers are doing is right. Yes. Just like they are responsible, those hired ulama, I would say ulama, I would say hired puppets of the court, who would say that yes, whatever the king is doing is right because he is the Khalifa of the Muslims. And everyone will be like, yes, he's the Khalifa of the Muslims, so accept him. He's right. Whatever they're doing is right. I must understand this where I'm going. So now, they would do wrong. They would be criticized. But they would bring Islam in the fold. They say, no, this is Islam. They would go to wars. They say, this is jihad. So they would do the misdeeds. They would do the wrong things and they would say that this is Islam. So rulers, the character of rulers was that. They would bring Islam to save their own hide. They would taint the name of Islam to save their own misactions, to save their own misdeeds. So now we found two characters. One of the rulers, one of Ahlul Bayt. The rulers were those people who would sacrifice Islam to save themselves. And Ahlul Bayt were those people who would sacrifice themselves to save Islam. These two Islams we found. And they were two different Islam, two different ways of life. So now when there are two different ways of life, they need, one of them has to be wrong. You can't say both of them is a seerat of the Prophet. The Prophet did not have a dual personality. You know, one personality he shows to one people, the other to the other people. No, he had one life, one seerat, one sunnah, one way of life, one Islam. So now when these two came down, so now you have these two. And these two went their own way. From the deathbed of the Prophet, they went their own way until they were brought together in Karbala. See, they were brought together in Karbala. Now I want you to see, my brothers, you know, what Imam Hussein had done on Karbala. Just see this. Imagine this. Both these lines came down. Both are different. This cannot be that. That cannot be this. Either this is the Sharia, or that is the Sharia. Someone changed the Sharia somewhere. Whoever changed the Sharia, if you get to know that, then you should all decide, we need to leave what they did, we need to join what these guys did. Because there has to be one. There are only two paths until then. There are no three, no four, no five. There were only two. Those two came to Karbala. Now, if you say that this is right, then you must say that Hussein was wrong. If you say Hussein is right, then you say Yazid was wrong. And whoever was wrong, he changed Islam. Whoever is right, then that is Islam. Now, when everyone was dead, and Imam Hussein came forward, and he asked these people the question. He said, listen, why do you want to kill me? Well, hear this, what he said. What type of hujjat he made. He says, why do you want to kill me? Did I hurt any one of you? Did I kill any one of you? Did I take anything from any one of you? They said, no. So first he made them deny that it is not personal. That he did not do anything wrong. Now the second thing, Marius, understand this. Now he said, did I change the Shariat? Did I change the Shariat? He made them accept the whole army. No, you did not change the Shariat. By saying that, they have admitted that yes, Yazid did change the Shariat. They accepted that Yazid did change the Shariat. Because if Hussein did, then Yazid did. So now by saying this, Imam Hussein exposed them in such a way to let them know they themselves with their own tongues have said that the Islam we are following is not the Islam of the Prophet. Salawat. Salawat. You see how Imam Hussein brought these people and brought their whole Islam down to their knees. Did I change the Sharia? They said, no, you did not change anything in the law of Muhammad. They all said that. When they said that, now, then why are you fighting? If I didn't hurt you, and if I didn't change the law of Islam, if this is Islam you're saying, then why are you fighting me? No, only one answer they had. Only one answer they had. They said, Bughzan li abi. Because we hate your father. We hate your father. My brothers and sisters, inshallah, we'll see. We have one more speech after Ashura. And there I'll try to give a conclusion to the whole subject. But just here, understand how Imam Hussein brought these people down to this point, that now they have no way to go. They have no way to go now. They are in their own words, they have said that we are not on the Islam of the Prophet. And they are there to kill Imam Hussein because they hate Ali, his father. You know, this is the way of shaitan. You know, shaitan had said, when he did not do sajda to Adam, he said that I will misguide his children. I will take my revenge against his children. You ask him, what did the children of Adam do to you? You have a problem you have with Adam. Even then, you shouldn't have a problem with Adam because Adam didn't tell you to do sajda. You have a problem with Allah. You see, that is what Imam Ali was saying. I didn't do this. Rasulullah asked me to do this. Allah asked me to do this. You have a problem, you go to Allah. So when you say you hate his father, it means you hate what Allah was asking him to do. So you are not just the enemies of Ahlul Bayt, you are the enemies of Allah. And since you have no hope for Akhirat, then you would sacrifice your akhirah for your dunya. My brothers, this is how those people who came to Karbala came down to such a level that they killed the children of Hussein. You know, of all the shahadats that we have heard, you know, and each one of them is heartbreaking. And all the soldiers of Imam Hussein who gave out, who came out to fight the army of Yazid. And each of them was brave, and each of them fought so courageously and so viciously that the army was starved. But there was no soldier who made so much, who harmed the army of Yazid. There's no, even Abbas, you can say, Abbas or Ali Akbar, who fought so bravely. And the army was so afraid of him, they did not want to fight him. But no one broke the ranks of the army of Yazid like Ali Asghar did. You know, and no shaheed, his shahadat could be understood by any sane mind than the shahadat of Ali Asghar. Really. Imam Hussein, his bringing of Ali Asghar was such a potent weapon to show, to expose and reveal this Islam that came before him. That it took off the clothes of that fake Islam and made it bare and naked in Karbala. Ali Asghar brought that fake Islam to its knees. Truly, if there is, they couldn't explain and justify every other shahadat, but there's no way they can justify the shahadat of Ali Asghar. There's no way to justify the shahadat of Ali Asghar. Who would do such a thing? Is it a human or is it a jinn? Is it an animal? What kind of person would do such a thing? When you look at children, my brothers and sisters, when a child is an infant, you know, you don't have to be the parent of that child that when he is crying, you go to attend his needs. Everyone, if they see an infant crying, they would go forward to attend his needs. They will see what he wants. Because you see, a child at that age, he cannot feed himself, he cannot clean himself, he cannot help himself, he cannot do anything by himself. But obviously, this is not just any normal child, this is the child, the grandson of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This is the grandson of Rasulullah. This is the grandson of Noor. This is the grandson of that, of those people for whom Ayat-e Tathheer was revealed. This is that child that is born from that seed. Obviously, it is no normal child. That is why Ali Asghar knew that he did not want to live the life of this dunya. If he wanted to live the life of this dunya, he would stay behind with Fatima-e-Sughra. He would have stayed behind with Fatima-e-Sughra. The reason he left her and came in the hands of Hussein. You know this? You know, Fatima-e-Sughra held Ali Asghar in her hand and said, "My father, leave him here with me in Medina. Leave him here with me in Medina." Imam Hussein did not say anything. And she said, "Listen, if he stays with me, If he stays with me, then let him be here. If he comes to you himself, then take him. Hussein went and said something in the ears of Ali Asghar. And right away, Ali Asghar let go of Fatima al-Sughra and jumped in the hands of Hussein. As if he knew that he was born for that moment where he would give the final testimony for truth and heart. And soon that time will come, and that time came on Ashura. My friends, my brothers and sisters, tonight is the night of Ashura. Tonight is a special night. Tonight is a special night because Imam Hussein asked for this night. He had requested for this night. He sent Abbas and said, Abbas, go and tell these people that I want this one night so I can pray to Allah, so I can make ibadah to Allah. Ask for this one night. Abbas went forward and asked for this one night. He said, Hussein says, we will not fight tonight. Let us start from tomorrow. Tonight, Hussein wants to pray. And Hussein wants to tell everyone that this is his special night. Tonight, my brothers and sisters, those who are the mu'mineen, those who believe in Hussein, they know that this night is that night which is spent in the remembrance of the mission of Imam Hussein. This night Imam Hussein spent the whole night in three parts. One part was with the companions, and he met the companions and gave them his final words to them and told them what they need to be doing. Then he came to the ladies. When he came to the ladies and he advised them, he said, tomorrow I will ask you for sabr. I will ask you to be patient. Tomorrow, he told them, there will be hardships. There will be sacrifices. He asked every one of them to be patient in the times of hardship. In that moment, he spent some few moments with Zainab. He went to Zainab and said, Zainab, just a few moments with you, Zainab. After me, Zainab, you will have to be responsible for many things. You will have to be responsible for many things. Zainab and Hussein stood in the camp. And the voice of their mother could be heard. And as she looked up to Hussein, she remembered something. She came forward and kissed the neck of Hussein. Hussein kissed the hands of Zainab. He kissed the hands of Zainab. Zainab said, my brother, why did you kiss my hand? Hussein said, do you know why you kissed my neck? He said, Zainab, tomorrow you will see this neck being slaughtered. You will see this neck being slaughtered tomorrow, Zainab. And then he said, do you know why I kiss your hand? Because from tomorrow, Zainab, these hands will be tied in ropes. These hands will be tied in ropes, Zainab. Now when that happened, Imam Hussein and Zainab cried. And after that, Imam Hussein went to his own tent and started to pray to Allah, spend his night in prayers. And when the morning came, the battle began. One by one, these companions of Imam Hussein died. And when they died, Imam Hussein brought them all into his tent. And then after that, you see, the children of Hussein went. Ali Akbar went, and he came back. And as Ali Akbar came back, Hussein's hair had gone gray. Hussein had went so old in that moment of losing Ali Akbar. And then when Qasim went, Hussein's heart was broken in pieces. When Onan Muhammad went, it is as if Hussein lost his hand. And when Abbas went, Hussein had lost his back. As then, now he had nothing to give. Ahlul Bayt, they had nothing to give. They knew that this is the time. He came forward, and he went on the mound, and he announced to the people, he raised a voice, not for them, but to do hujjat on them, but for the rest of mankind. Hal min nasir in yamshuruna. Hal min mughisin yughisuna. Hal min dabbin yadubbu al haram rasulillah. Is there anyone who will help me? Is there anyone who will assist me? Is there anyone who will defend the haram of Rasulullah? Is there anyone who will defend the haram of Rasulullah? Isn't there anyone amongst you who will stand up? Isn't there any man amongst you who will defend Rasulullah? Isn't there no one who has a little iman in his heart that can say, this is Rasulullah's family, I need to go and help them? No one came forward. But what can I say? Lest the voice of Hussein goes empty. Maybe this is the reason Asghar came, that Hussein's call does not go unanswered. Ali Asghar cries in the tent. Hussein turns around. Everyone is crying in the tent. He comes forward. He asks them, what is the problem? Fizza says, Ali Asghar, when you made the call, fell to the ground. He fell to the ground, and he's not stopping. He wouldn't stop crying. He would not stop crying. Hussein came to Ali Asghar, picked him up in his hands, and he went to Ali Asghar, whispered something in his ears. What he whispered, I do not know, but all I know is this. Ali Asghar was crying. When Hussein whispered, his crying stopped. He won't say anything. He won't say anything. Hussein knew it was time. He said that my son, I will ask for water for him. He is dying. He is dying. I will ask for water. I want you to understand, you know, when Imam Hussein brought him out, he brought him inside his abba. He put Ali Asghar inside his abba and hid him into his chest. He brought him out with his abba inside his abba in his chest. When he was bringing him out, the army looked at him. The army said, Hussein is coming towards us. He said, he's hiding something. There's something in his chest. They said, and some of them said, oh, it is the Quran. Hussein wants to make peace. Hussein wants to make peace. He doesn't want to fight anymore. Oh, when Hussein heard these things, what he felt in his heart, all I can say, he must have said, you want me to live after Ali Akbar has died? Do you think I want to live? No! This life is useless now for me. Ajrakumullah. No, my brothers and sisters, I'm going to take my time saying this, and I want you to take your time giving your condolences to Fatima. Well, you see, when Imam Hussein came out to the battlefield, and he brought Ali Asghar in his chest in his abba. Now he exposed Ali Asghar. My brother, just imagine this in the eyes of the enemies who are watching. When they looked at Ali Asghar, they saw an infant, a child, who cannot help himself. They are those who have children in the army. They are those who are fathers. They have their own children. They can look at a child, and the child is dying of thirst. Imam Hussein, the way he explained his thirst, I want you to see this. The way he explained how thirsty Ali Asghar is. He brought him out, and he said, my son is so thirsty. He is so thirsty that he is blowing air. Hotan, this term when it is used, this is used, my brother, this is my sister, this is used when you take a fish out of water. When you take a fish out of water, there are three stages. There are three stages of its thirst. The first stage is that when the fish jumps up and down, it jumps up and down to show that it's thirsty. It jumps up and down. And when it doesn't have the power and the energy to jump up and down, it starts to roll. It starts to roll from side to side. This is the second stage of a fish when it gets thirsty. This is the second stage. If you ever saw a fish die, you will know this. This is the second stage. And when the fish cannot do this anymore, I want you to see it. When the fish cannot do this anymore, all it can do is open its mouth and close. Open its mouth and close. Open its mouth and close. Hussain is saying, Azlar is so thirsty. He doesn't have the power to ask anymore. Now he's just opening his mouth. No, no. And then when he said that to the army now, they look at one another and said, what should we do? What should we do? What's going on? What should we do? They look at each other. This is wrong. We can't do this. Some form of humanity was being raised in their hearts. They saw this is something wrong. We need to do something about this. Hussain. And then the others would say, no, this is Hussain's trick. Don't listen to him. He wants to drink the water. Don't listen to him. He wants to get the water. We know Hussain. And when they saw that, they said, all right, let it be that. Hussain, when he knew that, he said, listen, this water is not for me, nor for any of my family. I ask you just for this son of mine. Just for the son of mine. So now Hussain, he takes Ali Asghar, puts him on the sand of Karbala. Puts him on the sand, that burning sand. He takes his abba, puts it underneath, puts Ali Asghar on top of it, and moves back. And says, go ahead, you feed him water. If you do not believe me, feed him water so that he can live. He's about to die. He's about to die, feed him water. And when they look at this, now the whole army is arguing. The whole army is saying. And Umar ibn Sa'd looks at this and says, what is happening? What is going on here? Why are the ranks breaking? Ali Akbar came, but the ranks did not break. Abbas came, the ranks did not break. What is happening in this army? Which soldier did Hussain brought? They said, Hussain brought Ali Asghar. Now for Ali Asghar, Umar ibn Sa'd looks at this. Umar ibn Sa'd looks at this situation. And right away decides. And I want you to hear the words of Umar ibn Sa'd, so you see what he is saying. He says, Hurmala, Hurmala, ikta kalam al-Hussain. Hurmala, cut the speech of Hussain. He said, cut the speech of Hussain. Asghar is the speech of Hussain. Cut it before it destroys us. Now Hurmala, obeying that command, comes forward, puts an arrow that is three-pronged, that is used for animals. He puts that arrow in there. Hurmala is a master archer. He would shoot his aim and he would always get his aim. Kurmala aimed. As he aimed, he let go of it. But something happened. That arrow went past. It missed Aliya's guard. It missed Hussein. It missed them. It went by. And then again he shot it. Again he missed. Umar ibn Sa'd said, Kurmala, what's going on? You never miss. I never saw you miss an aim. What is going on? Kurmala said, what can I do? Every time I'm trying to shoot, there's someone behind who says, Hussein, do not kill my child. Closes his eyes and now takes that final fatal arrow. It travels, and as it travels, it comes towards Ali Asghar. As it comes towards Ali Asghar, oh, that arrow that is manned to kill Ali Asghar. Ali Asghar, his short life, he can remember the time he came from the lap of Sughra to the lap of Hussain. Maybe this is the reason he came here. One last time, I will save my father, Asghar's neck, and the arrow of Urmala. Arrow goes inside the neck. Asghar's neck is attached to the hand of Hussain. Arrow goes in the hand of Hussain. Asghar's neck is attached to it. Asghar is looking at his son. And the arrow that has pierced his son, his God, in one final moment, looks up at his son and smiles at him, as if to say, are you pleased with me, Father? Ajrukumullah. May Allah reward you, my brothers. May Allah not give you any grief but the grief of Hussain. May you not cry for anything but for Hussain and his family, but for Anil Bayt. Now I will say, Uzi Asghar. Hussain takes out the arrow. Hussain takes out the arrow. Ali Asghar's blood is coming out. When you cut the neck of an animal, when the veins and arteries are cut, the arrow, the blood spurts out. Hussain is holding that blood in his hands. But where can he drop it? Where can he throw it? He turns to the ground to drop it. The earth calls out to Hussain, Hussain, do not throw this blood here. For if you throw this injustice here, and the ground is not made for this injustice. The earth is not made for this injustice. It will never grow. Hussain looks towards the sky. The sky says, no, this injustice. Allah made me for rain so that I can give light. If you throw the blood of injustice in the air, the sky would not rain. Hussain, what he does, takes that blood in his hand, smears it on his face. The hair that had gone white, the hair that had gone white with Ali Akbar, had gone red with the blood of Asghar. Ajrukumullah. Now, inshallah, you may give condolences to Fatima. Give condolences to the Imam of your time. The Imam is crying more than you. The Imam of the time, he is crying more than you are hitting him down. One more thing. again, my brothers, one more thing, may Allah, and then I will end my speech here. And then, inshallah, you give your fursa, you give your condolences. Hussain turns around. Hussain takes Ali Azhar, turns around. Now he wants to go. He wants to go back to the tents. He wants to go to Umm Rabab. He wants to go in front of his wife. He wants to go in front of the mother of Ali Azhar. Now he goes forward. But something tells him and pushes him back. He goes forward, then backwards. Forward, then backwards. You see, my brothers, let me tell you, maybe I can put some sense into this. Let me tell you something. You see, Hussain was the Imam of the time. But he's also a father. He's also a husband. He's also a father. His imamate is pushing him forward. His fatherhood is pushing him backwards. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. He goes forward. He goes backwards. Until he can reach. Hussain, reach the tent of Umm Rabab. He hid Ali Azhar in the back. Open the tent, door of the tent. Umm Rabab, you watch to come. She said, did you feed my son? Did they give him water? He brought out Ali Azhar. Umm Rabab looked at Ali Azhar. And just asked to find, do they also kill children? In a battle. How can Hussain do anything about this? Hussain said, do not worry, I have something for this child. Hussain and Umm Rabab, they make a grave for Ali Azhar. With a sword he made a grave for Ali Azhar. And he put the grave, Ali Azhar, in the ground. He put the grave in, so that no one could find it. Umm Rabab was the only mother on the day of Ashura. Umm Rabab was the only mother who thought that her son is in the grave. Every other son, they were outside the grave. His son was the only one in the grave. But this last musibat of Azhar, listen to this and give your condolences. When the heads were being counted, the day after Ashura, the heads were being counted and the reward was being given. Whoever brings a head will get a reward. Everyone knew there's a child who was killed. But where is he? Where is he? They came looking for his body. With spears they dug into the ground. Until they found the body of Ali Azhar. They took out that body.